Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. I'm coming to you live tonight, broadcasting from our flagship radio station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. We're also going out on the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online to a worldwide audience of loyal fans at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Co-hosting with me for the final hour of tonight's live broadcast, as he did for the last few segments of the second hour, is Eddie the Bombardier Miller, wearing his Political Cesspool vintage T-shirt.
Yes, I took this Political Cesspool shirt out of the trophy case. This is the same one I wore in New York all up and down Manhattan, James.
Yeah, you reckon it? Eddie wore two shirts when he was walking up and down Times Square, his Political Cesspool T-shirt and his David Duke for Senate T-shirt. Eddie, tell him if I'm lying.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was really surprised at how receptive the people were. Half of them, you know how New Yorkers are. You could have probably a gorilla on your back. They wouldn't notice it. They don't care. But, you know, I didn't have any negative comments. All the comments I had were positive. Matter of fact, I even met a young Jewish couple on the top of the Empire State Building, James. I don't know if you remember that or not, but they asked me about the radio show, and I told them about it and told them how they could get on the Internet and told them it was a, you know, paleo-conservative, pro-white radio show, and you know, I didn't get any backlash from it. I was surprised, but I'm very proud of this T-shirt, and when I get off this radio program tonight, it will go back in the trophy case. And I think I'll hand it down. Who knows? Maybe after I die, maybe we can auction it off or something. Who knows? But, yeah, I'm very proud of that.
Well, you know, we could always auction it off, Ed, because, as you know, we can't lure corporate sponsors. So we are a listener-supported broadcast entity. So, you know, let's not make that too soon, though. Let's hold off on your death for a while, at least until Bill and Winston get healthy again, because I need you right now. Anyway, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, you know, he's been a part of this radio program as a co-host since 2006. He has sparingly joined us in the studio over the course of the last few months, but he's going to be coming in a little bit more often than not over the course of the next few because of the, you know, we are setting up the Political Cesspool Infirmary here. Anyway, Bill and Winston are kind of suffering right now. But Eddie the Bombardier Miller, how did he get the nickname the Bombardier? You would immediately think that he was actually a bombardier in combat. Well, you would be wrong. Now, Eddie did honorably serve in the American military armed forces. He was a combat medic in Vietnam. Eddie, am I telling the truth?
You're right on, son. Well, I think Winston gave me that nickname one hot summer night.
You were a combat medic, but not a bombardier.
Not a bombardier. We were at the radio station one night, and Winston was thinking up nicknames for all of us. If I remember right, we called you Baby Boy.
That's right.
And we called Art Frith the Chief. By the way, I hope the Chief is listening tonight. If he is, I want to say hello to the Chief, as he's very dear to my heart.
A former Political Cesspool producer, Art Frith, the Chief, he served in the Navy as a Chief.
He surely did. And he was retired, and I came up with a phrase one night that endeared me quite to him, really endeared me to him. You know, he was a chief, and I said, well, you know, chief, the chief is always right. The chief is never wrong. The admiral is sometimes wrong, but he's always the admiral. That's what endeared me to him. But
the bombardier.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how the bombardier came up, if I may step on your toes, Ed. I've never been to a public meeting with Eddie that he didn't get ejected from. Now, that's the truth. That's not as being sensational. I'm not exaggerating. I've never been to a meeting with Eddie that he didn't get kicked out of. And so that is how he became nicknamed the Bombardier, just a crazy, mad bombardier. Winston Smith, our co-host, gave him the nickname. A couple of examples that come straight to my memory. We were at a Ron Paul. When Ron Paul last ran for president, which would have been, of course, in 2008, we were at a Ron Paul for President meeting in Tennessee, here in Memphis. And Eddie, myself, and Winston were representing the Political Cesspool radio program at this meeting. And the event organizer suggested, to our surprise, to our pleasant surprise, that we hold a Ron Paul for President rally at Nathan Bedford Forrest City Park here in Memphis, Tennessee, which, of course, the Political Cesspool defended, which, of course, is the final resting place of the great general. And so it was proposed that they have a Ron Paul for President rally at Nathan Bedford Forrest Park. We were excited about that. We were all for it. There was one woman there who was there with her black boyfriend. The woman had purple hair, if Eddie remembers. And she said that we shouldn't do a Ron Paul for President meeting at Nathan Bedford Forrest Park because, you know, that would look racist. And that was all it took. Eddie knows he has to be reserved on the radio program. He knows what he can and can't say by FCC standards, but he was not so reserved in that meeting. And long story short, he was ejected from that meeting. Then we went to a meeting a couple of months later. The sitting congresswoman of our district, Marsha Blackburn, was in town. Eddie, the Bobadier Miller, and I were there at this meeting. And as soon as Marsha Blackburn, who is the United States representative in Congress for the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee, as soon as she walked in, Eddie began to pepper her with questions about her support for the United Nations. And he would not relent. He was actually very polite in this engagement, but he wouldn't relent. He demanded an answer from his servant. Yes. His servant, mind you. You know, people have it confused these days that Congress people are our leaders. They are our servants. And he demanded an answer from her that she would not give. And because he continued to press her for an answer, he was ejected from this meeting as well. Physically, I might add. And so after two meetings and two ejections, he became affectionately known as Eddie the Bombardier Miller. So Eddie the Bombardier Miller, he became, and Eddie the Bombardier Miller, he will forever be known in the quarters of the Political Cesspool radio program. But anyway, that's how his nickname became bestowed upon him. Eddie, we have 30 seconds to break. Are you proud of your nickname?
I could not be prouder. I'm certainly proud. You know, the NRA was there, too, and kind of locked horns with them. You remember when they called the radio station looking for me, James, and you wouldn't let me know until sometime later because I guess you were afraid of the fireworks. What would happen if they found out where the radio station was? In fact, my standard procedure was when someone had called the radio station and threatened us, I would ask them if they needed a map. This before the GPS came out, I asked them if they knew how to get there, if they needed a map, because they didn't. Tell them how to get there.
Yeah, that's another story for another show. But, yes, on more occasions than one, people would call the radio station to threaten our persons, and Eddie would get on the phone during commercial break and ask if they needed a map. He would be happy to meet them. Anyway, we're going to get back on topic, just giving you some background information on how he became the Bombardier. It wasn't because of his combat duty. He was a medic, not a Bombardier. But anyway, we're going to get back on political points right after this, and trust me, you're not going to want to miss what we have to say next. Stay tuned. Don't let me be misunderstood. Please understand me, baby. Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't misunderstand me, baby. Don't let me be
misunderstood. Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, James Edwards and Eddie the Bombardier Miller. I think we spent a whole segment of the show tonight explaining to you why he became named the Bombardier. And now we're going to cover some more political points, as you would expect us to do here in the Political Cesspool radio program. Black teens in South Carolina pulled a gun on a woman over her Confederate flag bikini. This story comes from Rock Hill, South Carolina. I knew a girl who used to live in Rock Hill. Had a good time in Rock Hill. Well, I can't, we're not going to get into all that, Eddie. Anyway, A Rock Hill man says someone threatened him with a gun over the weekend. This was last weekend. After a dispute broke out involving a woman wearing a Confederate flag bikini, police say. According to a report filed with the Rock Hill Police Department, 20-year-old Christopher Ganey reported the incident to police on Sunday at 7 p.m. Ganey told police he was with friends at a pool party when a group of black teenage males approached. Ganey told the officers the men began calling the group in the pool racists because a female in his group had a bikini depicting a Stars and Bars rebel flag, which is, of course, the St. Andrew's Cross, anyone who knows anything. The report states that the men surrounded Ganey, the black men surrounded Ganey, the white man, causing him to stand up, believing that they were about to fight him. One of the men in the group allegedly pulled out a weapon described in the report as a very small semi-automatic pistol. Ganey told the officers that the man pointed the gun at Ganey in an apparent attempt to intimidate him. According to reports, the black man that pulled the gun was about 5'10" tall, 19 years old, wearing red shorts with a short haircut. He had 3 tattoos, as they always do. And gold teeth, as Eddie said. The report says that the suspects ran from the pool when they realized that the police had been called. Moral of the story is we cannot allow ourselves to be intimidated by the actions of these thugs. This sort of bullying must stop. We must stand up for ourselves, our rights, and our heroes. Of course, we're not going to find such leadership if we look to people like Trey Hargett in the Republican Party, if we look towards the modern-day leaders of the Campaign for Liberty or Oath Keepers meetings. And maybe, Eddie, we should look to 20-year-old females like the one that I have pictured for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Now, by the time Eddie gets done with his commentary, you're going to want to bookmark that website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Look up the blog entry entitled Black Teens Pull Gun over Woman in Confederate Flag Bikini, because I have pictured for you what looks to be a 20-year-old female in a Confederate flag bikini, very similar to the one that sparked an argument last week in South Carolina. Eddie, before you deliver your commentary on the story, which does have a political point, I want you to describe the woman that we're both now looking at in this article.
Well, James, she is definitely a woman. This is a very beautiful young woman. I think the article says she's 20 years old. She's perfect. She's at least a 9 or a 10 on anybody's scale. And what amazes me, like you brought the point up, James, we have a 20-year-old female. She's not heavily muscled. She's very well endowed, a beautiful woman. And it's obvious that she's proud of her ancestry. She's wearing the Confederate flag bikini. You know, contrast that, and I'm going to rub a little salve on the wounds we've inflicted on some of the Tea Parties and the C4L and all that stuff, because, you know, they started out good. But see, now, if the C4L, Campaign for Liberty, you know, and the Oath Keepers and the Tea Parties and the whole menagerie of so-called patriotic groups, if they would, instead of retreating every time they're called racist, if they would stop hating themselves because of their culture, because they're white, and stand up for what they believe, like this 20-year-old, James, they could be effective. Right now, I can't think of anything that any of these groups have done. As a matter of fact, I have a friend that invited me to the C4L meeting last week, and I said, the last month's meeting, I said I could not possibly imagine anything that could be done. All right. Now, when we have the people and the politicians, you know, we're talking about these limp-wristed Republicans and our leaders in these in the groups, they're so intimidated by threats of racism. I mean, they trash, instead of this lady right here, proud of her heritage, we actually renounce our ancestors. James and I were talking during the break how we both have ancestors who fought for the Confederacy in the Lincoln's War. Go urinate on your ancestors' graves, because what you're doing when you don't get in a fetal position and you denounce your history, your racial cultures, you're saying that your ancestors, your grandfathers, your great-grandfathers were ignorant and they were stupid. They were not enlightened like we are, you know, but you, we can never get anywhere if we're so easily cowed by racial innuendo. You know, for instance, like being an anti-Semite or a racist. And that's how, you know, our enemies know that we're easily paralyzed like that, James. They know that if, I mean, anybody out there, I wish they could call in from any of these parties and tell me, what have we done? And I've been there too. We won't get in the street. We won't hand out leaflets. We won't go to the sheriff's station en masse. We won't go to our congressman's office en masse. We won't do anything. You know, I'm so disgusted with that stuff, James. And I'm not going to renounce my ancestors just because of a bunch of, you know, communists and Jews and blacks hate us and call us racist and stuff. I will never renounce my cultural heritage.
Well, if only the politicians that supposedly represent us had the courage that this 20-year-old female that we have depicted on our website tonight does, then perhaps we'd be a little bit further on down the line. But, you know, I was talking, I think, way back in the first hour tonight about how the best thing about our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, is the comments that people leave beneath the articles that I post there. And to no surprise, certainly not to Eddie's surprise, who was looking at the picture of this woman in her Confederate flag bikini this evening, this has been one of our most popular articles of the week, Eddie, with several dozen replies. And hopefully after this program tonight, a few more will be added to it. But anyway, folks, thepoliticalcesspool.org, look up the article entitled Black Teens Pull Gun Over Woman in Confederate Flag Bikini, and you can add your comments to it as well. Now, another thing. Yeah, we've still got more ground to cover tonight. You can't have a first world nation with a third world population. That's a line that I first uttered on CNN on the Palazan show when I was featured on there for a full hour back in 2007. You can't have a first world nation with a third world population. It's a line that we repeat quite often here on the Political Cesspool radio program, and never before has it been proven more true than today. If you want to see one of the many benefits of diversity and multiculturalism, El Paso, Texas can provide you with a prime example. And this is a story that was covered by local affiliates in El Paso. And I read directly from them. It's disgusting, unsanitary, and it's going to leave you shaking your head. What we call, rightly so, illegal aliens, they call migrant workers. But the story continues. Migrant workers have turned El Paso into a gigantic toilet. Human urine stains the walls, and feces is piled up in an alley that's just blocks away from the convention center and other tourist hotspots. If they don't let you go inside, you have to go outside. That's why El Paso is like that, Roberto Miranda said. Miranda, Eddie, the story reads, is a migrant worker. He sleeps outside looking for work like at least 100 other people, and he waits for work in the early morning hours. The disgusting alley is around the corner from the center. He admits that they're using it as their personal toilet. Hepatitis A, B, and C can be found in any of these mounds of feces, and they're all over the place, said El Paso resident Randy French. We're going to pause right there and let you ponder upon the facts that I just gave you. When we come back, we're going to tell you the rest of the story, which is...
Yeah. We've been working hard, babe. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We got to get
out of this place. All right, everybody, picking up exactly where we left off, James Edwards here, along with Eddie the Bombardier Miller. We were talking about what's going on in El Paso, Texas. They are really being enriched with the joys of multiculturalism and diversity there. The illegal aliens, according to one of their major television affiliates there in El Paso, are turning the streets, literally turning the streets into toilets, urinating and defecating all over the ground. Mounds of it right around the corner from the El Paso Convention Center and other tourist hotspots. And we have a picture for it if you want to see it. you might not want to see it, particularly if you're eating, but it's terrible stuff. And Mayor John Cook of El Paso told us he is aware of the problem, but he doesn't know how to fix it. He said he's already sent code enforcement out, but they say they need to catch people in the act, which hasn't happened. Other people are saying they want porta potties put out for these illegal aliens. Now, why are the illegal aliens deserving of porta potties? They're breaking the law by even being there. They're breaking other laws by relieving themselves in the middle of the road like an animal. You can quickly clean up this problem by forcing the people who are urinating and defecating in the street to clean up their own mess and then deport them out of the country. I mean, it's not a hard concept. This story really irritates me. If you read the entire story, which we have posted for you tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org, you'll see that it's written in such a way that leads you to believe that it's our fault, it's the Americans' fault, that the dregs of society behave like animals by relieving themselves wherever they stand. Now we should provide restrooms for them? Now that's madness. If the city of El Paso wants to clean up the streets, as I said, they should get rid of the people who are polluting them. And make no mistake, these people are illegal aliens. They're not migrant workers. They're illegal aliens who are breaking the laws of this country. They don't deserve our pity, and they should be collected and sent back to Mexico or for wherever they came, period. You know, the aliens should try to force their own countries to better themselves and provide for their citizens. America can no longer provide employment for the rest of the universe. It's just not realistic, and it's not our place to do so. If we continue to allow ourselves to be inundated with people from the third world, America will soon become a third world country itself, complete with streets lined with feces and urine. El Paso's proof of that. And what are we going to hear next? They're just defecating where Americans want? I encourage the government of El Paso, Texas, to enforce their laws and put America first. You can watch the video related to this story at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But, Eddie, it's not just the government. It's not just the politicians. Even the churches these days, and as I've said before and as I've said tonight, this is a Christian program. Eddie, you and I are both members of Baptist churches. Even the Baptist churches here in Memphis, even your church, Eddie, is a part of this problem.
You know, and James, real quickly, this story is going to tie into the next story we're going to talk about, the TSA. But you're absolutely right. You know, right here in Memphis, I can illustrate why this isn't just a government problem. You know, we have people all over the United States, and I see it here in Memphis, to save a dollar, you know, they will cut the throat of their white citizens, American citizens, by hiring these illegals and paying them under the table. You know, at one time, James, in this here United States, when you went to a construction site, the majority of the laborers were black, and they had been in this country, born in this country. They were citizens. And you drive around, and, you know, I've worked as a laborer. You know, it's an entry-level position. But now, if you go around to a construction site, the majority of the time, you're going to see at least 80 to 90% of the time, anybody that's a laborer, non-skilled, low-skilled job, they're going to be Mexicans. And I can guarantee you, folks, they're not gracious Spaniards. They're
Tell them about gracious Spaniards. Where you got that from?
I got the gracious Spaniards from, from my church. We have a church that meets out in another campus. I won't call the name of the church, but we have another campus, and it's been taken over by the Spaniards. Our pastor refers to them as Spaniards. He called them gracious.
Tell them about the difference between an illegal alien and a Spaniard is.
An illegal alien is someone from Mexico, and like I've pointed out a few times to people at church, we don't have a border with Spain. These people aren't Spaniards. Spaniards look like us. You know, they're white, and we don't have any Spaniards in this country. We have a bunch of illegals. But these people, James, they're using these illegals because they can save money. They can pay them less money and hire them under the table, and they care not one whit whether they're in here legally or not. I can guarantee the people in my church have not checked citizenship papers. I doubt that very seriously. You just don't see any white workers. You don't see any black laborers. They've been totally displaced by these people. And And when they come into the country, people, and here's something else that irritates me. They'll say, well, these Mexicans are only doing jobs that white people won't do. Well, James, we can't go out and work on a job for $4 or $5, half a minimum wage, but these people can, because when they come into this country, they are put on just numerous, more government handout programs than I can remember. But they basically, when they work for a construction job, say for instance, they're what they earn is basically spending money, because they pay no taxes. They don't have auto insurance. They don't have any driver's license, most of them. They don't need medical insurance. The government, you know, takes care of all that. But see, every time our citizens, and most of them are good in, you know, for the most part, but and they think they're out being altruistic, but when they're funding this massive immigration like that, they're also cutting the throat of their own children. In the future, these people that are out here working for minimum wage at these labor sites, you know, construction sites, their kids are going to be going to getting free education in the universities, and they're going to be competing against people like Isabella, for instance, and they're competing against my grandson and my great-grandchildren, and we're rapidly becoming a minority in our own country. And, That's the whole design. And this is
your church is reaching out to
that's right.
So-called gracious.
That's right. Our church does that, and I just refuse to. I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to like our church. I'm not going to aid and abet in a felonious immigration to this country. I'm not going to be a part of that. If they want to kick me out, that's just too bad. You know, because I like the church, but it's just they're so misguided there. And this ties perfectly into our next story, James. This we're going to talk about. What's going on right now in the airports, the TSA, the Transportation Security Association Administration, they are a lot of people, most people know about this. We've got a guest coming on in a minute to talk about this, done some research for us. I'm going to turn it over here to him in a minute. But the TSA agents are forcing people to have two choices. They can either go through these X-ray machines, which put out an enormous amount of radiation. That causes cancer. You take, I have a dear person in my family who's a recovering cancer patient. And you know, if she wants to fly and they force her to go through these radiation machines, that's just greatly, increasing the odds that she will get cancer again. And if you don't go through these X-ray machines, they'll fondle you. And these people, you know, these sweaty, obese, ingrates, Neanderthals, are sticking their hands with glee under the bras of women and into their panties, and they're fondling them. It's a sexual assault. And in any state in the United States, that is a Class A felony, and you can go to jail for 5 to 10 years in any state in the union. These people are doing it. It's illegal, and the FDA, the federal government, says if the states don't like it, like Janet Napolitano said, Homeland Security Director, when Texas started fighting them, she said that Texas can just drop dead. Texas stood up to these people and said, we're not going to put up with these felonies. Like we talked about earlier, the state legislature getting ready to pass a law. They actually didn't need a law because they already have a law. But what did the feds do? The feds made the state of Texas, they said they're going to make them a no-fly zone, like Libya over here. They're going to prevent airplanes from coming in and out of Texas, James, and that's what we're going to lead into next.
Yeah, we're going to get into that next. We have a caller on the line here from Memphis that is going to provide us with a little background information, but it's so interesting how political correctness, you know, just slits our throat in every way possible. You've got these renegade TSA agents. This has been covered by a lot of people. I mean, this isn't new. Yeah, you got the Mexican border wide open, but yet they're going to be groping, you know, little babies as they make their way through airport metal detectors. And at the same time, you've got these so-called racial profiling laws. You got a guy with a turban. If you walk in with a turban, you can't see anything of these people but the slits of their eyeballs. And they'll get to walk right through because to pat them down would be racial profiling. So you can't do that. So you're going to do it to grandma, and you're going to do it to six-year-old little kids, and that's what the TSA is all about. And we'll be talking about that a little bit more as we move forward into the final segment of tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio program. We got a caller on the line who's going to give us a little more information. Covered a lot of ground tonight. It's been a lot of fun, hasn't it? Still 15 minutes forthcoming until next week's show, so stay tuned.
Political Cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do,
place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, friends, we're going to try to cover as much ground as we can before the sand falls from the hourglass in this, our final segment of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. We'll be back with you, of course, next week, Saturday, June 11th, here on the Liberty News Radio Network. But before then, we still got the last few minutes of tonight's show. And let's go now to our friend Lee here in Memphis, who is a good friend of Eddie the Bombardier Miller. Lee is also a member of several of the groups that Eddie is part of, the Campaign for Liberty and Oath Keepers, among others. Lee, why don't you give yourself a better introduction to our audience and kind of move forward on this subject of the TSA that Eddie broached.
Oh, yes, James and Eddie. Yeah, this TSA, it's just evil. And there's no reason to scan people and give them cancer or give them a pat down and grab their personal things. Israel has they use dogs that only cost about $10,000 to train. And this, you know, the machines are about $200,000, and that's just because of that Chertoff guy. He just is making money on this. And, you know, it doesn't really do. It's just more for show. And now they're overruling the complete will of a state of the union. You know, that's sort of treason.
And, well, you know, I'll agree with you on this. You bring up a pretty good point there, and it's something that we should bring up more often. It's so interesting to draw parallels with the hypocrisy that we're faced with in terms of the forced multiculturalism and forced diversity, you know, at the point of a bayonet even. And then you look at Israel or overlords over in Israel, and they have a great social system over there. They have closed borders. I don't know how far you want to chase it, but I mean, you know, they even have an apartheid state. And yet over here, we're forced to be subjected to all sorts of pain, torment, character defamations, and this, that, and the other. And then you get into the TSA, and that's a whole other bag of worms, and you could just do it the way the Israelis do it. If it's good enough for them, it should be good enough for us, and you wouldn't have hardly any of these problems.
Yeah, it's just, Israel, I think it's just sort of a Trojan horse for the bankers, just put it there to cause everybody to be divided and to be at war with each other. You know,
well, and, you know, yeah, you're right. You're right about that. And that, of course, kind of takes us away from the scope of the TSA but and down a whole other topic of discussion.
Okay.
But
okay.
Yeah, much could be said about that. And perhaps that's time for another program. But, Lee, I want to thank you for calling in tonight. I want to thank you for putting up with Eddie. You know, it's a hard job to do.
It is. Okay.
But thanks for the call tonight, Lee, and we look forward to talking to you again very soon. Want to take another quick call. I believe Dan in Ohio is on the line. Dan, now you're on the political cesspool.
Oh, hi. How you doing tonight?
Doing well.
I wanted to weigh in on your conversation about what the Mexicans are doing in Texas.
Right. Did you get to see that story?
This isn't an isolated incident. I mean, you go all around the country in some of these older cities like in Cleveland and Sandusky, Ohio, and Toledo, Ohio, the same thing exists. It astounds me how Eric Holder, our attorney general, went ahead and sues Arizona, who made at least sort of an attempt to try to get immigration under control. And, I mean, it shows that at the very top of the government in this country, we don't have anybody working in our interests on this issue.
No, we don't, and sadly, most of the municipal governments aren't working for our interests as well. I mean, you see El Paso down there doing nothing, you know, because they're paralyzed with fear that the federal government may come down on their heads, as the federal government always does if you violate the false gods of cultural Marxism. But no, it's certainly not limited to El Paso, and you bring up a good point. I'm glad you made it. you know, El Paso is one that we're focusing on because there's a brand new story about it out there. But this is going on anywhere that they predominate. You know, anywhere where third world people predominate, you get the manifestations of a third world society. And we're going to have a post coming up on the Political Cesspool website on Monday that was written by our co-host Winston Smith. He may be suffering from some hearing loss right now, but he can still write. And so he's got an article that's forthcoming on our website on Monday that provides some pictures of it, literally a wasteland, Dan. You know, when these illegal aliens are coming, trash strewn for acres and miles, just filth, utter filth. And that's the least of our problems that come with third world immigration. But as Eddie just asked, and his microphone didn't turn on right now, but as he just asked, you know, we're the environmentalists when it comes down to the kind of damage to our environment that is being brought upon by non-whites. You know, we can all wring our hands when an oil rig explodes because white people put it there. You know, but when you see this article coming up that Winston's going to put up on Monday at thepoliticalcesspool.org, we're the environmentalists there. Anyway, Dan, as with any story that we cover on this show, we could chase it in any number of directions, but I appreciate your contributions to the discussion this evening.
Okay, thank you.
Anytime. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being with us. Eddie, we're running out of time tonight, only a few minutes left this evening, but I tell you what, I have had a lot of fun tonight, and I've had a lot of fun hosting the show with a man wearing his vintage Political Cesspool t-shirt.
I've had a ball myself. I only wish we had another hour to talk more about the TSA and about this immigration problem. And I would like to reach out to my buddies, my colleagues in all the Patriot organizations, and I would like to make a plea to you to don't back down from when someone calls you a racist. Don't back down from that. Take pride in your ancestry. You know, it may sound politically incorrect, but if you check history, almost all the inventions, you know, our medicine, our art, our science, our engineering, you know, physics, air travel, hospitals, anything you can think of has been invented, and you know, by Anglo-Saxon, Germanic people, you know, white European people. We do it, and our race has been a gift to the world, you know.
I'd like to say, and I don't mean to interrupt, but Eddie's exactly right. You know, we have contributed much more good to the world than we ever have evil. And unfortunately, when you leave it to the media to define that which European Americans represent, it's always slavery. It's always something nefarious. And if you're proud of who you are, you're always denounced as a racist. And of course, you just got to get to know the modern day definition. A racist in 2011 is defined as a white person. You're right. If you're a white person, you're a racist. It doesn't matter what you believe. Racism is anything a white person does that a non-white doesn't like. And I'm telling you, folks, you know, we've given much more good to the world than we've taken from her. We've heard the grievances, but where's the gratitude?
Don't go to a hospital if you call
us racist. Yeah, don't go to a hospital if you call us a racist. Don't, you know, get in a car. Don't turn on an air conditioning. Don't take a flight. Don't do any of that stuff if you believe that all that we've contributed to the world is evil and no good. And this is what Eddie's talking about. And I know, Eddie, you were going to make a point to say that we've come down hard on some of the people who would seemingly be in our camp, our fellow brothers at the churches, our fellow members of some of these organizations like Campaign for Liberty and Oath Keepers. But yeah, the Tea Parties, you know. But listen, folks, you got to get over that stuff. There's good potential in all these organizations, but you just got to realize it. And you've also got to realize that the suffering, and I've said this as much as I've said some of my other catchphrases, but the suffering that we must endure with these horrible character defamations and false accusations pales in comparison to the sacrifices of blood and bone and the physical attacks that our ancestors had to give in order to carve this nation from a wilderness. When compared to that, the attack that we face certainly pale in comparison. And so, you know, and everybody benefits from that which we've given. It's not just our family or our extended family. It's all the races of mankind have benefited from the advancements in all of the sciences and arts that our people have given the world. And that's something you need to remember. And don't be afraid to stand up and speak out because you're intimidated by being called a name. Speak out, stand up, and join us on the front lines. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to join us tonight, I want to remind you that the Political Cesspool's quarterly fundraising drive is now in full gear. $100 is a lot of money to me. It's a lot of money to Eddie. That's a utility bill payment. It's a lot. But if you can contribute anything to the radio program, remember that we are listener supported, and we would certainly appreciate your support at thepoliticalcesspool.org this evening. You can donate online tonight safely, securely, discreetly with a credit card. If you donate $100 or more, you'll get an autographed copy of Jared Taylor's new book, White Identity. If you donate $250 or more, you'll get Jared's book, autographed, and a copy of Gods and Generals from our partners at Warner Brothers, who we're helping to promote right now. That's our show for tonight, everybody. We'll see you next week. God bless you.
To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.